the weight of this world, and I know that you can give me rest. So I cry out with all that I have left. Let me see redemption win. Let me know the struggle ends, that you can mend a heart that's frail.
Yeah. Listeners, you are tuned into The Hope Show, and wow, what a message I have planned for you today. I am so happy that all of you could tune in today. Last week, I was gone on a women's retreat with a very dear friend of mine for 2 days. It was so beautiful and peaceful down there. I had an amazing time, and I learned a lot, and I brought back lots of pictures. Today's message was inspired by this trip. On the first day there, it was laid upon my heart what this message would be about today, and for the duration of my stay, I was filled with a message to bring home to all of you. Even though I had an amazing time at the resort, I missed all of you very much. Saturday morning came, and my thoughts were on each of you. I knew my show was in good hands with my husband, but all the same, I was missing all of you and thinking of you, wondering what you were doing and how you were doing. I hope each of you have had a blessed 2 weeks since our last visit. I encourage all of you to check out the progress on my podcast page on Shaziz Radio and go over there and comment to me. Tell me what you think. Give me some constructive criticism, if you will, is coming along very nicely. After each show, it is uploaded to my podcast page, so they're available for you to listen to at your convenience. Also, I want to encourage each of you to get on my page and comment. As I said, you know, I want to hear from all of you. Let me know what you think. Give me some ideas of what you want to hear on The Hope Show. Make some suggestions for upcoming shows. After all, folks, this is your show. Each and every one of you is very important to me, and I care. I want to help. I want to make a difference in your life. If you can't reach me, then contact Shaziz, and he will most definitely get me the message. And if you are on Facebook, I will get your messages right away, as my phone will tell me of new notifications as they come in. This week, the message is about United to Rescue. The message I have prepared for you this week is about being a missionary in your life right now, where you are right now. Oftentimes, when you think of missionaries, you think of a member of a religious group, someone who dedicates their life to going to faraway places to help people in need. These missionaries may stay long periods of time in a foreign land to provide help, to make a difference in the lives of others, to build churches, or help feed the hungry, or help build homes or orphanage, or to offer medical assistance to the sick, or other services in education. The word missionary means to send. A missionary or missionary persons is sent to somewhere with a specific mission to do charitable works for those who are less fortunate. The purpose of a missionary is to understand their role, learn the culture, learn to speak the language, keep a sweet and honest spirit, adjust to new environments, identify with people, affirm the call to serve others, focus on their assignment, be accountable for their decisions and actions, and live closely to the word of the Lord. However, you don't have to go to faraway lands to be a missionary. You can do all of these things right where you are, today, at this moment. You can be a missionary for your family and your community every day, right where you are, without even traveling anywhere. Make the most of your time. Time sure does seem to fly by, doesn't it? On the other hand, in some situations, it may seem like time just crawls. But no matter how fast or how slow it feels like time goes by, each of us have only a predetermined amount of time on this earth. And with that in mind, I ask you right now, what are you doing with your time? Time is such a precious gift, folks. If you are wasting your time on foolishness, maybe it is a good time to change your outlook and to start looking ahead to new ways of doing new things. Perhaps you will decide to be a missionary right now, in your life and in the lives of the people that you come into contact with every day, and even beyond that, to total strangers. Make a connection with everyone you chance to meet. Perhaps change comes from a new vision, a new goal, a renewed faith, a renewed hope. Whatever the change is that you decide to make, find your purpose and be encouraged. Be brave. Live with abandon. Renew your spirit, folks. You must know that in your heart, you are on this earth for a very valuable, important purpose. Do you know what that purpose is? Have you ever thought about it and asked yourself that question? What was your answer? Do you now know, or are you still walking around clueless as to what your purpose is? If you have discovered your purpose, are you fulfilling that purpose? Or are you wasting valuable time on foolishness and worldly things? Are you going about the business of accomplishing great works and deeds? Are you active? Are you a participant in your life? Or are you sitting on the sidelines watching your life pass you by? What are some things that you can do to find your purpose? Millions of people ask themselves the same question. Why am I here? Let me share with you some of the suggestions that I have found for you, and I hope that it will help you to find your purpose or your passion in life. Number one, make a list of things that you do for fun. Include parts of your job that you really like and your hobbies. If you had $1 million and no worries about money, how would you choose to spend it? List your passions, the things that you love doing and why they are so fulfilling to you. Number two, write down the names of people that you admire and why you admire them. When you are done being honest and thorough with your list, then take a long look at the list and know that what you appreciate in those other folks is also in you. You are attracted to these qualities because they speak to you. Adopt these admirations of other people as a way for yourself to live. Adopt them as your own actions. Number three, make a list of things that you do naturally without even thinking about it. It may be helpful to ask others for feedback, as it is not always easy to see our own talents. Some of these talents may include an eye for detail, a great sense of humor, a nurturing side, the ability of discernment, the ability to focus intently, or even to be playful. Even look at the times you've gotten yourself into trouble. If you turn those times around in a positive light, you may find a gem of a natural talent you hadn't previously appreciated. All these things done naturally without much consideration or effort extended, these are what they call your genius. Some people are great at math or music, but there are many other types of genius as well. For example, genius mothers, genius teachers, genius listeners, and genius independent thinkers, just to name a few. You may even be a genius at having compassion, showing empathy, feeling sympathy, giving kindness, love, consideration, and encouragement to people. You may be a genius in discernment or forgiveness, loyalty, friendship, other relationships, money matters, etc. The list could go on forever, but we are meant to use our genius in service of our life purpose, folks. Number four, look at your passions, your actions, and your genius list, and spend 10 minutes each morning doing something from one of those lists. Number five, notice how you feel. By definition, if you are living your life purpose, you will feel exhilarated, excited, happy, and alive. If you are not feeling these things, then I would suggest you go back to your list and see if there is anything you forgot to write down. Or do you do the one thing on your list that you have been avoiding because it is too scary to you? And number six, the last suggestion that I have for you, is feel your fear and do it anyway. Feel your fear and do it anyway. It's normal and natural to feel scared when stepping into your life purpose. A quote from a man named Fritz. He says, "Fear is really just excitement without the breath." Fear is really just the excitement without the breath. So keep breathing and take the next step. If it's worth doing, you're probably going to feel a little scared doing it at first. But it's worth it, folks. But don't look at it as impossible, and don't let your fear define who you are or who you will be. Don't let your fear stop you from pressing on to do greater things. You must face your fears head on to get beyond your fears. Once you take that first step to dispel fear, it no longer will hold you captive. There is no longer anything to fear. Fear is simply fear of the unknown. And once you've conquered that, you've won the battle. Look for ways to incorporate your passions, your actions, your genius, more and more into your life each and every day. And as you do this, your life purpose will begin to unfold right before your very eyes. Keep in mind that purpose isn't always found right away, but along the journey. I hope you will find these tips most helpful for finding your own purpose if you haven't already. If you didn't catch all of those tips or you want to be able to listen again or write them down, today's show will be uploaded to my podcast page on Shaziz Radio later so that the message and the tips will be accessible to you and you will be able to pause and write as you need to. Ephesians 5:14 says, "Wake up, sleeper, and rise above the things of the world." Did you know that people are watching you every day? They are, and we need to be a light upon their path. We need to be leading them by good example. We need to be careful how we live. Don't live in ignorant ways, but live as wise people. We need to be missionaries to our fellow brothers and sisters. We need to stand united to rescue. We need to have purpose to serve our life and to serve the lives of others. We need to pull them out of the trenches, right where they are, right now. And you can begin to do that, right where you are, right now. People in need are all around us every day, brothers and sisters. You only have to step outside your door to look around and really take it all in, to see the need everywhere you go. Make good use of every opportunity you have. As I said earlier, we are all here on earth for only a predetermined amount of time, and none of us know how long that time is. These days are evil indeed, and there is no time to waste on foolishness. We must stand tall, stand brave, stand united, and live our lives as we were on a rescue mission. A mission to save as many brothers and sisters as possible. Folks, today, we have an assignment. Every day, we have an assignment. Are we fulfilling it? Are we going to reach our goal in our predetermined amount of time on earth? Are we going to choose to service other lives so long as our own lives hold out? Or are we going to choose that it is too hard to help others and just let someone else do it? We are missionaries put on this earth to find ourselves, find our purpose, find our way, and then pay it forward. By loving and helping our fellow brothers and sisters from the same pitfalls we've experienced. We are here to be one another's mentors and caretakers. We are our brothers, sisters, keepers, meant to carry one another's burdens, mentor to them, help guide them in times of difficulty. Love them, encourage them, and show them the same grace and mercy that has been shown to us. At this time, I'm going to go ahead and take a short break and play you a few tunes, and I'll be back momentarily.
I worship your holy name. The sun comes up, it's a new day dawning. It's time to sing your song again. Whatever may pass and whatever lies before me, let me be singing when the evening comes. Bless the Lord, oh my soul, oh my soul, worship His holy. Worship your holy name. You're rich in love and you're slow to anger. Your name is great and your heart is kind. For all your goodness I will keep on singing. 10,000 reasons for my heart to find. So bless the Lord, oh my soul, oh my soul, worship His holy name. Sing like never before, worship your holy name. Bless you, time has come. Still my soul will sing your praise unending. 10,000 years and then
Welcome back, listeners. I'm so happy you can join me today. I hope you are enjoying today's message. For those of you who are just tuning in today, my message is about being united to rescue. The message I have prepared for you this week is about being a missionary in your life, right where you are, right now. You don't have to travel to foreign lands to be a missionary. You can set the example. Be a light onto someone's path. Give guidance and educate. Help where help is needed. Right where you are. Right now. Without traveling very far at all. Actually, you can simply step out of your house and take a long, hard look at the world around you and see that the people of the world are in desperate need of help. We need change in our own lives. We need to rise to the challenge. There are millions and billions of people who need to be reached, to be rescued. We can be missionaries for these people, messengers of hope to the lost and to a dying world. Every one of us have the ability to be a missionary, right where we're at. A missionary is simply a person who believes, a person sent somewhere with a purpose, an assignment, a goal, and that is to help reach the people of the world, one person at a time. We can be a great influence to those around us. We can impact people's lives in ways that we have no idea of. We can all make a difference. We must lift our voices, unashamed, until all have heard, and never give up until our mission is complete. We must each and every one be careful and mindful of what we think about as well. Our life is shaped by our thoughts. Think about that for just a moment. Whatever is in your heart will eventually show up in your everyday life. Whatever is inside you will eventually find its way out where anyone and everyone can see it. That alone is very important and should give you a huge incentive to monitor the things you allow to shape your heart. A large part of guarding your heart means learning to control your thoughts, your words, your disposition, and your general outlook on life. What you think usually comes out in what you say. What you say affects how you feel and shows up in your overall attitude. Be very careful indeed, because people are watching your actions and listening to what you have to say every day. Be a light upon someone's path, not a hindrance. In the course of everyday life, this determines how you handle your circumstances, whether you will have peace or whether you will fall apart in stressful situations. It determines how you will respond to others, either with compassion and understanding, or with judgment and arrogance. Your mind is supposed to be in control of what your body does, but sometimes we fail to exercise authority over our body and over our mind as well. We allow ourselves to get sloppy with our lives. We must remind ourselves daily to be a person of integrity. Keep your word to yourself and others. Let your actions match your words. Sometimes people will say one thing and do something else that will bring about the exact opposite result. This can be very damaging to your integrity in the sight of others looking onward to you for guidance. You may not be aware that people are watching you and taking in what you say or how you respond. But folks, rest assured, they are. Your words and your actions hold the power to bring others up or to tear them down. We must be careful and mindful at all times of our actions, words, and deeds, so that we will not cause someone to stumble as well as ourselves. We must discipline our mind so that we can control our thinking and the direction of our thoughts. For where our mind travels, our body will surely follow. Whatever happens, remember to do things that will keep you qualified for your purpose in life. Qualified for your purpose in life. 1 Corinthians 9:27 says, I harden my body with blows and bring it under complete control to keep myself from being disqualified after having called others to the contest. Don't disappoint or let down your fellow brothers and sisters by letting your guard down or by deception of the heart, folks. It's not all about you. We are the caretakers of our brothers and sisters, too. Don't do anything that would cause them to stumble and fall with you. We are all vulnerable to temptation. If you recall, in a few of my shows, I've mentioned that we are all Satan's favorite playground. Satan knows exactly how to get to us and what buttons to push. Maybe it's with a new car, a new home, ice cream, chocolates, cookies, even by means of our very own insecurities. Whatever your weakness is, Satan knows. Satan will hone in on that. A voice will whisper to you, you know you want that, or you know you can't do that, or so-and-so is so much better than you are. You will start visualizing what it would be like to have whatever your heart desires, and before you know it, you are caught in Satan's trap. Folks, Channel 666 broadcasts 24 hours a day, and it is programmed to cater to your weaknesses. Let me say that again. Channel 666 broadcasts 24 hours a day, and it is programmed to cater to your weaknesses. Its images appear better than what you know is right, but it never lives up to the advertising. Whenever you find yourself tempted, you better check yourself, folks, and quick. The less you listen to the voices of temptation, the weaker the signal will become. Plan your escape route. Rescue yourself from temptation and rescue other people with your stories. Let your mess be a message to others. Each and every one of us has a story about our life to be told. We all have a history. We have all struggled with trials and tribulations. We have all made mistakes, and we have all fallen short of the glory. We all have colorful pasts, things we regret, things we are ashamed of, things we feel guilty about. We have all experienced loss in some form or another. Perhaps it's the loss of a career, a family, loss of health, a house, or perhaps a loved one. We have experienced joys and successes too. It doesn't matter so much what has happened in your life, as much as it matters how we will respond to those circumstances. Life can leave you feeling bitter, depressed, resentful, unforgiving, and filled with hatred. Life can make you feel a lack of self-esteem, self-respect, and self-control. But we all have choices in life. We all have choices in life. We are given free will. We have choices. We can choose to let life kick us around and keep us down, or we can choose to take our life and make it better for ourselves and others around us. We can use our mess to be a message to others. Our stories, our mess, they connect with other people. It is through our sharing experiences with someone that we write a history with another person. Isn't that awesome? That we can make a mess, our message out of our messes, and that we can help write history with other people. That is so awesome. We create emotional ties and deepen relationships when we do this. We all have a story to tell. We are the authors of our own book, and we have many chapters in our own life. And each of us is a chapter in life's big novel as well. It stretches beyond even us. We are just a mere piece of the puzzle, a tiny chapter in the big book. Thinking of it that way and realizing that we are an important chapter in the broad scope of things helps put our life in perspective. Stories give us hope. When we tell other people of our life story, it gives others the courage to keep going. If people hear what has happened in our own lives and see how we have come through these difficult times, how we have responded to circumstances, and how we have not given up, how our circumstances have made us stronger, and our circumstances have shaped our lives in a positive manner, and we haven't given up over to the negativity, we haven't let negativity rule our lives, then other people are encouraged to press on in their own lives in a positive way. This is all a part of being a missionary too. Not only are we required to physically help each other, we are required to help one another emotionally and spiritually by sharing our experiences. Each story that we have, each and every one of you out there, each story is a gift, a treasure to this world. No two stories will ever be exactly alike. Some will be far more painful and traumatizing than other stories, but that doesn't make any story less important than the next or the one before it. Some will speak to your hearts, and others will not. Some will connect with you, and perhaps others won't. In a few moments, I'm going to share my testimony. I encourage each of you to do the same. Share your life experiences with other people. Live with abandon. I love that song. Live with abandon. Do all that you can. Never doubt your own ability to be a great missionary where you are right now in your life, a source of healing for another human being. The knowledge and experience, the wisdom you have gained through the years, are all very, very important and valuable tools for someone else to learn to grow, learn how to press on, to be encouraged, to be brave and bold. It's a great tool to help others to pay it forward and keep that ripple of hope going. Your response to me trying to encourage you to share your story with others may sound like this. You may be saying to yourself, I'm not qualified. I would feel like a fool. I don't want everyone knowing my dirty laundry or all those skeletons that are in my closet. I don't want other people to think any less of me. I don't know what to say. I'm scared. I don't want to open all those old wounds and rehash all those pains from my past. Folks, believe me, I have had these same thoughts race in and out of my head this week. As I was preparing my show this week, every one of these things came to pass in my own mind. I too thought, I am not qualified for this. I will feel foolish. I don't want everybody knowing my dirty laundry. I don't want everyone knowing what skeletons I have in my closet. I don't want other people to think any less of me. What would I say? I'm scared. I don't want to open these old wounds and rehash the pain from my past. Believe me, I know, folks. I understand. I totally and completely relate. But you know what? At the retreat this past week, the good Lord pressed this upon my heart. And so I have to do this today. I have to. I was going to do it, and then I wasn't. What would my audience think of me afterward? Would I let them down, or would I bolster them up? Would I make a complete fool of myself on worldwide radio, or would I be of help to someone? Would anyone relate? Would I connect with anyone? As I mentioned in the beginning of my show, this week's message was inspired by this two-day trip I took to the Women's Ministry Retreat in the Ozarks of Missouri. I know my audience is mixed with believers and non-believers, and I sincerely wish not to offend anyone with my own beliefs. Throughout the months that my show have aired, I've had listeners from all walks of life, whether believer or non-believer. All of you have shown me so much love, so much kindness and respect, so much support, and I love each and every one of you. I try to show all my listening audience, whatever your beliefs are, the same kind of respect that I would want to be shown myself. We are equally important to one another in this world, no matter what we believe or what we don't believe. We all have our place in this world. We all have our purpose. This world is big enough for all of us to live in, without animosity. My show is for all of you, no matter what you believe, no matter what you don't believe. There is enough love in my heart for each and every one of you, that there is a place for you in my show. So what I'm about to say isn't meant to offend anyone in any way. All of you know I am a believer, but I do not judge anyone for their beliefs. For let that person judge, if they are without sin, let them cast the first stone. Brothers and sisters, I sin every day. I'm not about to be the first one to cast a stone or judge you. I don't care whether you're a believer or a non-believer. I love you and respect you no matter what. And there's a place in my heart for you, no matter what. We are all brothers and sisters of one another. You deserve respect just the same as I. And I love you no matter what your choices are in life. But while I was at camp, something happened deep inside of me. It was a heart thing. It was a God thing. And it deepened and personalized my walk with my God. It came to my reality that maybe I'd been holding back. Maybe there were certain barriers that I needed to let go of to move ahead with God's plan for me for once and for all. I felt as if I had been holding back for some reason, parts of my life. But we all fall short of the glory, and it's a day-to-day walk. And as long as we have faith, then that's all we can do with each day. Just do better than the next, the day before us and the next days to come. But this weekend, I was given a vision, a purpose, and it has everything to do with you, with this radio show, with hope. I invited God to use me in any way that He saw fit. I invited Him to move through me in a mighty and powerful way, in magnificent ways that surpassed all understanding. I prayed that He would remove every barrier and that He would guide me in all the ways to do His will. A lot of other things were sent up in prayers, but I won't go into great detail, but it was a life-changing experience for me. I am so blessed that I had that opportunity to go, that my dear friend wanted to share that with me. From that moment, doors started to open. This week's message was born. A friend gave me a connection of a person that would tie right into my message about being a missionary. That person is very busy, and he was unavailable to speak this weekend on my show, but I will try to get him on at a later time when things are more convenient for him. But a purpose was discovered. It was revealed to me. A vision, a mission, an assignment was given to me. I was told to give my testimony. So if I let fear stop me from sharing my story, stop me from doing my life purpose, am I limiting God? If I doubt myself, is that limiting God? When we share our stories, we help others to confess, and it helps them to realize that they are not alone. It helps to break the silence of pain in our lives. After this break, I will be sharing my own testimony. And folks, wherever you're at out there in this world today, whatever walk of life, wherever you stand, right where you are, right now, I encourage you to do the same. I encourage you to share your stories with those around you. Connect. Help each other. Make our hearts willing. The pressures of life make it so hard sometimes. But please increase our patience and mold us to be better representatives for our fellow brothers and sisters. I'm going to take a break and give you a few songs, and then I'll be right back.
Torn between myself and your truth. These cursed memories forever seeping through. Oh, my thirst for myself left me wanting more. Till I found myself face down on your shore. Say, come to the river. Oh, lay yourself down. Let your heart be found. You say, come to the river. Drink from the cup I pour. And thirst no more.
Come to the river.
Welcome back, listeners. I'm so very happy you could have joined me today. It's been a very important message about being a missionary where you are at in your life right now. My show today is about standing united to rescue. If you are just tuning in, after the show has aired, my show will be uploaded to my podcast page on ShazizRadio.com. You can listen to it at your convenience. Before the break, I told you that the next thing coming up on my show would be that I would give my own testimony. So here it is. Here is my story, folks. I am in hopes that by sharing my story with you, it will give you the courage to go out there in this world and share your story with someone else. Folks, I admit, I am so very nervous right now. This is my very first testimony ever, and it's being aired on worldwide radio to all over the world. I have to admit, that's a little intimidating. I feel like I'm taking a huge leap of faith by sharing my story with you. But if I can do this, folks, so can you. Telling your story is a part of being a missionary to rescue other people. People will connect when they hear someone's life story. It gives people hope, seeing that you survived your trials and tribulations. And look what good has came from your life. So folks, here we go. In October of 1969, I was born to a farming couple. We lived on a farm with approximately 365 acres. I have one brother who is 14 years older than I am. He is one of my very dearest and best friends. My brother was pretty much my only true friend as I was growing up. Farm life took up most of my childhood. I didn't have time for friends, as most of the time was spent working in the fields alongside my mom and dad. Also, there weren't any neighbors with children my age for miles. My folks believed that children and parents alike worked side by side on the farm from sunrise to sunset and beyond every day to get all the work done. It was a situation of all hands on deck. As long as there was work to be done around the farm, everyone pitched in until it was done, for however long that took. I started kindergarten in 1975, when my brother graduated high school. I became a latchkey child. Being a latchkey child means that when you get home from school, no one is home to greet you, and you let yourself into the house. My folks were working on the farm. I was instructed on where the key to the house was kept and to lock the doors when I got in, get a snack, do my homework, and my mother would be back to get me very shortly. I never had long to wait, maybe 20 minutes at the most. 2 years later, in 1977, when I was 7 years old, I was molested multiple times by the hands of a teenage male, a child of a family that was friends with my mom and dad. I was in second grade at the time. It went on for some time, and I never told another human being. I was filled with shame and guilt. I felt so dirty. I couldn't even share it with my brother, whom I literally told everything. He was my very best friend. I thought he wouldn't love me anymore. I thought it was all my fault, even though I knew, deep down inside of me, that it was not. I didn't think anyone would believe me. I didn't want to tell anybody what had happened. I suppose I thought if I didn't mention it, then no one else would get hurt. I would get over it, and it would be forgotten. how wrong I was. It changed my life forever. And it took away a great part of my childhood. I became very withdrawn in school. I was paranoid and skittish. I didn't have anything in common with the other children in my class, and I stayed to myself mostly. Because while those children were busy being children, I was busy being depressed, ashamed, guilt-ridden, full of questions. My heart was so very heavy. I had a difficult time paying attention to anything. I was painfully shy as a child anyway, so this extra burden didn't help my situation at all. Eventually, a few years later, I did tell my brother, and he convinced me to tell my parents. For whatever reason, my confession made no difference. It was as if they didn't hear me. I knew they had, though, but not another word was spoken of it. It was my battle. I don't want to make it sound as if my parents were indifferent to me. My parents are wonderful people who love my brother and I very much. But parenting doesn't come with an owner's manual. And sometimes, even as parents, we drop the ball with our children. They didn't mean me any harm. I didn't understand at the time, and it hurt my feelings that my confession was ignored. But years later, I believe they just didn't know how to deal with it, how to respond to it. So in their mind, if it was out of sight, out of mind, it didn't happen. Being molested as a child plagued me for many, 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 many years, well up into my adult years. It took me many years to let it go and forgive that boy. In 1988, I graduated high school and I married my high school sweetheart 2 weeks after graduation. I became involved in church, but not heavily. I moved 4 hours away from my parents' farm and I started my new life. For the most part, all was well with my world. In 1990, my daughter Kara was born. She was born 2 days after Christmas. Aside from my heavenly father, Kara is the very best gift I ever received. That is not to say that I am not grateful for all the people in my life. They are all precious gifts of God to me. But Kara is the light of my life. From the moment she was born, she was an extreme blessing to me in so many ways. Too many ways to even count. Kara was my whole world. We had so much fun together. And she gave me back some of my youth. I had a second chance to be a child again through her. She is now 22 and my best friend. She blesses me every day with her wonderful spirit and her shining light. She is my biggest and most rewarding achievement in my life. In 1992, my marriage failed and I went through a divorce. I fell away from God. My faith took a hit. A few years later, I remarried and sought out my faith once again. In 1995, my daughter and I were baptized in the same church, just a few short months apart. I was approximately 26 years old when I accepted the Lord into my life and became saved. My daughter was approximately 7. Things in life were going pretty good again. I was happily married, had succeeded in my career choice. I was living the American dream. I was blessed with owning my third home, which was very nice by most standards. I had a very nice vehicle. I felt as if I was on top of the world. I felt that for once, things were working out in my favor. I felt as if I was getting my lucky break. I had the career I had always dreamt of having. A beautiful house, a wonderful husband, and an amazing daughter, a very nice car, I was truly blessed. I thought, what more could I possibly want in my life? Then, in January of 1999, I made a very stupid choice that would later alter my life forever. For you see, I became greedy, arrogant, boastful, filled with pride and deception. I never used to behave this way. But now I took chances that I knew were wrong. I made choices I knew were wrong. I would justify these choices to myself by telling myself I would not let things get out of control. I really had myself believing I had control of the situation. I thought I could fix everything before my deeds were found out. All the while, knowing deep down in my heart that little voice was telling me, I knew where the road would end. But I didn't listen. From January of 1999 to December of 1999, almost an entire year, I lived with a secret. I continued to make this wrong choice, as I said, for almost one solid year, before my worst nightmare happened, before I was discovered. In the blink of an eye, all that I worked so hard for, my whole life, came crashing down around me. Overnight, my choice cost me a 13-year career, my family, my house, my car, my friends, everything, literally. On December 1 of 1999, I went to the police station and was later released. That was the day, December 1st of 1999. My life was changed forever again. My life would never be the same. I couldn't fix it. My foolish pride, arrogance, deceit, boastfulness, selfishness, and greed came back to bite me with a vengeance. I know now why this happened. I was getting a little too big for my britches, if any of you have ever heard that expression. I had begun to think a little too highly of myself for all of my nice things. And God decided it was time to put me in my place, and in a hurry. The life I once knew came to an immediate, screeching halt. All my life I was raised with upstanding morals and values, integrity, honesty, faithfulness, kindness, compassion, love, and was of good character. I was not a bad person. I had always loved people and helped people. I had always been compassionate, considerate, and attentive to others' needs. I was still raising my daughter the way that I had been raised, with fine morals and values, and all the things that I had just mentioned. I taught her as I had been taught, to respect others, love others, and to treat others as you would want to be treated. But even still, a person can know what is right. And even in the midst of doing wrong, people can still be wonderful people and treat people in wonderful ways and still make bad choices. And I did. I paid a very costly price for my own foolishness. December of 1999 to February of 2000, I was pretty much at home in bed. For 2 months, I stayed in bed, depressed, ashamed, disgraced, guilty, embarrassed, humiliated, angry, filled with self-hatred, kicking myself for being so stupid. My self-confidence, my self-respect, and my self-esteem were non-existent. I lost all of my friends. Folks, let me tell you, it is when you are at your very lowest in life that you find out who your true friends are. It can be a very painful life lesson. I only got out of bed to get Kara off to school and be there for her in the evening when she came home from school. I pretended for her sake, while I was at home, or while she was at home, that Mommy was doing just fine, and then I would completely fall apart when she left. For those 2 months, I barely took a shower. I barely ate anything. I would lie in bed in the dark room with curtains drawn, curled up in a ball, crying and rocking myself. I didn't even bother with makeup. I didn't care about myself. I just wanted to die. Kara was the only thing that gave me strength to get out of bed. On the few occasions I would leave my house to check the mail or go into town to run an errand, I felt so utterly, completely alone. I felt as if people were staring and pointing their finger at me. I literally had people who knew me walk from my side of the sidewalk that I was walking on, would walk over to the other side of the sidewalk to avoid me. I became ostracized from the world I once knew and the people in it. When it was all said and done, I had one person who would call me or randomly show up at my house to check on me while Kara was in school. She would not give up on me. She would not let me give up. She wouldn't leave me alone until I got out of bed. She became my lifeline. She understood who I was, knew my heart. She didn't judge me. She knew I had just simply made a horrible mistake, and that was it. I clung to her friendship. The hardest part came when Kara started noticing things about me that were a little out of routine, a little amiss. She was 9 years old at the time. She'd always been a very smart girl, smart beyond her years, and very much in tune with her mama. I fought hard for 2 months to conceal how I felt so her life wouldn't be disrupted, but in the end, it was for naught. I have always been honest with Kara, even when she was barely old enough to understand. I sat her down one evening knowing in my heart that after I came clean with my daughter, that she would surely hate me, and that I would fall from that mommy pedestal. I told her everything. I was bluntly honest. I asked her forgiveness with tears of shame streaming down my face. And once again, my precious little girl came to my rescue, blessed me in a way that she couldn't even have imagined. 9-year-old Kara jumped into my lap, threw her little arms around my neck, gave me kisses, looked into my eyes, and with all the love and adoration of a 9-year-old child, she said, "Mommy, I still love you. Everyone makes mistakes." And she held me as I wept, with all of my brokenness, in the hope that my daughter had just given me. My second marriage fell apart. My house and my car were foreclosed on. I was not hireable for employment. I moved to another city to start a new life for my daughter and myself. I became involved with an abusive man. As Kara's dad and I had always remained close friends after our divorce, I didn't take Kara with me right away. It was in the middle of a school year. I didn't want to uproot her from the life she was used to. I wanted to try to make a smooth transition for her. I asked her dad to keep her for just a little while. I knew he could provide for her far better than I could at that time. I lived less than 15 miles away from her dad, so I would go visit her daily after school, and sometimes stay up until bedtime. I missed her so. But where I was living, I had no electricity, no car, barely any food, no job, no running water. I was living with this abusive man, living in extreme poverty. I was pretty much completely destitute and homeless, living by the grace of this man's generosity to let me stay there. I lived with the abuse for 3 very, very long years. Something in me was broke. I didn't feel like I deserved better. I felt like I deserved the punishment. The year of 2000, I completely hit rock bottom. I lost touch with God again. I couldn't go any lower than I was. It was a huge adjustment to go from living in a nice house, having wonderful things, a wonderful family, food, shelter, money, a job, nice cars, my dream career, to literally nothing but the clothes on my back and a few sentimental items I had managed to bring with me. During the year of 2000, I spent 6 months in and out of court, in trouble with the law. In May, by the grace of God, the judge gave me a slap on the wrist because I had never been in trouble with the law in my life. I was ordered 4 days of shock time in the county jail. It was to be divided up into 2 weekends. I would turn myself in on a Friday evening and be released on a Sunday evening. One of those weekends was Mother's Day weekend. I shall never, ever forget that, and how it broke my heart to be sitting in that cell when all I wanted was so desperately to be sharing that day with my daughter. From there, I was ordered to be on 5 years of probation. Again, by the grace of God, in October of 2000, I finally found work. Almost 10 months, actually 11 months later, I found work. As my boyfriend and I shared his car, I would go to work about 20 miles away by day, and then I would come home to take my boyfriend to work in the opposite direction. He worked as a graveyard on the graveyard shift. Then I would go spend the rest of my evening with Kara at her dad's house in the total opposite direction, another 10 or so miles away. Then go back and get back into the car and go pick up my boyfriend after work. I would fall into bed around 1 a.m. and get up around 5:30 a.m. every day. It was a vicious cycle that went on for months. Eventually, I became so ran down and exhausted from the stress from all the driving to different points of the continent for my job, his job, and to be with my daughter, I caught myself dozing off frequently in the middle of my commute to pick up my boyfriend. There was not one thing I would have missed, though. I had to work, I had to pick up my boyfriend, and I would not have missed those precious moments with my daughter for nothing in this world. She meant everything to me. This went on for a while, and eventually I suffered a serious car crash from falling asleep at the wheel. I woke up in time to see the car before me had braked, and I had no time to stop. I steered to the right, overcorrected, went back and forth across the interstate a few times. Cars, trucks, and semis were swerving all around me to miss hitting me. My car flipped several times before resting in the median on its side. My shoes had been knocked off my feet and were in the middle of the highway. I was terrified of my boyfriend and what he would say or do to me when he found out I had wrecked his car. He had just bought it 2 weeks before I wrecked it. I managed to jump out of the window and I went racing down the highway, barefooted and bleeding all over the place, not knowing how badly I was injured, just wanting to get to my boyfriend because the wreck had made me late picking him up. That was the only thing I could think of at that moment. Not about how hurt I was, not about being barefooted, not about being in the process of still moving and all my kitchen was spread out all over the highway. No, those things weren't important to me. I was afraid that I would be beat for crashing his car. And so I ran down the highway. A woman stopped, chased me down, forced me to stay put. She wrapped my arm in one of her white pillowcases that she had in the car, and she called 911. The wreck was massive. When the emergency crew came, I refused their help. And they told me I was a walking miracle. I shouldn't have even been alive sitting there talking to them. The emergency team could not believe what they were seeing, that I was really alive. The car was mangled metal. Again, by the grace of God, I was saved, and the only thing that physically happened to me was my left arm, from elbow to wrist, was hamburger, from the glass of my arm from the window on the driver's side. Aside from the feeling that like a semi had hit my body, I was sore and bruised from head to toe. A friend came to pick me up and against my wishes took me to the hospital where I had glass taken from my arm and it took 36 stitches to sew me up. I went home to recover. Yes, my boyfriend was furious, and yes, it was very difficult to recover. I had a very difficult few days. And at the end of the first week of my wreck, I had to turn myself in to the county jail on a Friday, which was also, by the doctor's directions, time for me to have my stitches removed. I couldn't afford to do that, so I sat in my cell that weekend with some little tweezers and I plucked the stitches from my arm by myself. I didn't feel the pain. I was still recovering from the bruises and I felt so much pain in my heart for being there on Mother's Day weekend. Praise God I didn't have Carrie in the car with me that night. In a few more short months, I had 3 jobs. I was able to bring Kara to live with me. I moved her and I into a trailer house. I was still in the abusive relationship. I was able to get electricity and water. I was able to afford a tiny Cracker Jack box car that was absolutely nothing to look at, but it got me to and fro. I had to constantly throughout these 3 years remind myself over and over and over again. I didn't have what I wanted, but I had what I needed. I had food and money, shelter, my daughter, not just one job, but 3 jobs. And aside from being in an abusive relationship, my life was looking up. In about 2001 to 2002, due to the wreck and several speeding tickets, I ended up with a year-long suspended license. Obviously, I didn't have anyone to help me get to and fro, so I took matters into my own hands and drove anyway. I didn't drive anywhere that wasn't necessary. I drove to my 3 jobs, to the grocery store, and to Kara's school to pick her up, and that was it. But it was a very long, stressful year of constantly watching over my back because I was still on probation. I did eventually get pulled over one time. And I busted out in tears, bawling like a baby, in front of the police officer. Broke down very embarrassingly and foolishly, and told him my story with the law, and begged him to let me go. Begged him to let me off with a warning because I couldn't be in trouble for more violations. I would lose my jobs and my child and possibly go to jail. Once again, God showed me favor and the cop released me. I held down 3 jobs for 7 years as a single mom, doing everything I could, sometimes working 45 to 60 and 70 hours a week. I did everything I possibly could in my power to keep my daughter well taken care of and loved. Even though I was in an abusive relationship, I was determined. I was determined, folks, not to let life get me down. My daughter was my sole purpose for moving forward. I was going to get us out of this mess I had put us in, one way or another. Many times I felt like giving up in those 3 years. Many times I contemplated the idea of suicide. I even tried it once or twice. But by God's grace and my daughter's belief in me and her love for me, her hope, I was saved yet again. And I am still here to tell you this story. Without missing a beat, I was determined my daughter and I would have the life, or as close to as possible, that we once had had. By 2003, the abuse had taken a toll on my mind. Keep in mind that I was always very strong for Kara, never letting on how bad off I was, mentally, emotionally, and even physically. It was like I had 2 personalities back in those days. A personality that was strong, brave, and courageous, never giving up, and always striving to do better. That personality was for Kara. The other personality was when she was at school or staying weekends with her dad. That personality was very destructive, with a devil-may-care attitude. Wanted to die, felt weak, lost, lonely, and depressed. In those 3 years, I drank heavily, very heavily, to the point that I would drive my car somewhere and not even remember how I got there. Mentally, my heart and mind were so very cold and calloused by this point. Never toward my daughter. There was always that second personality just for her. I loved her so much. And I tried so hard to never do her wrong. And to this day, never do her wrong. But toward my abuser, my friends, and even my parents, it was a completely different matter. My sense of humor was dark and twisted. At the end of the 3 years, I knew I had to find the courage deep inside of myself to get out of that abusive relationship. It was killing me. Little did I know, and I didn't find out until many years later. During that 3 years, my folks had taken out a life insurance policy on me. They were convinced I was going to die at the hands of my abuser. They were convinced that they would need money to bury me and still have money left over for Kara to survive after I was gone. I found myself standing at the foot of the bed each morning, staring at my abuser while he slept. And with all seriousness, and this is the scary part, with all seriousness, contemplating the idea, how I would physically get rid of him and his body. After a few months of this, I finally came to the realization of just how very sick I was. How far away I had got from the things that I valued, from my parents, from God, from my own gentle, loving, and giving spirit. I had all but died inside when the realization hit me that if I didn't leave, I would either be dead or I would spend the rest of my life in prison for murder. I waited for the day that my abuser left town for a few days, and I made my move. I left. A few months later, I met my wonderful husband, Shaziz. He was going through some very tough times of his own, and a divorce, left with 3 children, a very part-time job, no money, and the utilities being turned off and not knowing how to cook for his family. As it turns out, my daughter Kara and his daughter Jessica are the same age, and were in the same class. I moved Kara to this school when she was in 5th grade, and her and Jessica became instantly the best of friends. After Shaziz's divorce and I had left my abuser, the girls played matchmaker and brought us together to meet. The rest is history. We have been the best of friends and partners ever since, 11 years later. In the beginning of our relationship, for the first 2 years, it was really rough, and it is a miracle that we're even together today. We fought like cats and dogs. We had so much baggage each of us brought into our relationship from previous relationships and our own personal life experiences. But we knew we loved each other, and we knew we were both good people with a heart of gold. And so we clung to each other as if we were each other's lifeline. And indeed, we were each other's lifeline. We hung in there with each other through thick and thin, through anger, pain, low self-esteem, lack of money, lack of confidence, through our 4 children bickering with one another constantly, and his 3 children giving me a run for my money, trying to make things so bad that I would leave their dad. One thing was always a certainty throughout that time. My daughter Kara and I stood strong and united, friends. We were there for each other through everything, good and bad, always from the time she was born, even up to now. At first, Shaziz's children thought I was great, until I became more of a permanent fixture in their lives, and then I became a threat to them. They became jealous because they had to share their dad with me. But through every bit of that, Shaziz and I remained steadfast and strong for one another and for our children. We didn't let them bring us apart. I was slowly finding my way back to the Lord again, and as time went on, things became easier and easier. Life became worth living again. I found joy beyond all understanding. We married in January of 2009. In 2011, for nearly the entire year, I became gravely ill. I had neglected the health of my teeth for years, and it finally caught up with me. By the time I let go of my stubbornness and I decided to seek a dentist, my body was so full of poison. By the time I got to the doctor, he said I was so bad off that I could have died at any time. I was a walking time bomb. If I hadn't came in when I did, he said he felt that within 6 months, I would surely have been dead. The poison would have gone to my bloodstream, then to my heart, or to my brain, and killed me instantly. My body was feverish at all times. I felt like a scrambled egg from the inside out. I was losing my memory, my coordination, my motivation, my energy. I was sick all the time and found myself constantly too exhausted to do anything. It was messing up my whole body and how I was able to function. I worked at a job where I worked 38 hours a week, and it was all I had within me to stand at that cash register every day, feeling as I felt, and be kind and courteous and loving and compassionate and caring and service those people that were like family to me. I nearly lost my job because I couldn't function on a cash register. I still fought hard not to let it get the best of me. I still kept going through all of that. I just kept going on with my life, though I was much slower, weaker, and tireder. I don't know how I managed during this time. I was so good at keeping how I truly felt from others that no one realized just how very sick I was, not even Kara. It took a good 6 months for Shaziz to even recognize the extent of my poor health. I used up all my energy at work, and then I had nothing left to give when I got home. Shaziz took over much of the cleaning, and we had a lot of sandwiches that year. I had much time to look over my life, who I had hurt along the way, how selfish I had been, at the stupid choices I had made throughout my lifetime, in some cases how mean and unforgiving I had been. It was time for me to think about what was really important to me. It was time for me to put my priorities in check and find myself. It was time for me to seek the Lord in a far greater, more intimate way. And when I looked back at my life, I realized that the only thing I had done right up to that point, aside from meeting Shaziz, the only thing I had done right was raising my daughter. During the same year, Shaziz and I were financially pretty bad off. I couldn't afford to go to the doctor to get a prescription for my meds. I take an anti-anxiety medicine that is name brand and there is no generic. I lack serotonin in my brain, and so I have a chemical imbalance. And this is supposed to help with that. I have taken it since Kara was an infant. It is quite expensive. So along with my other health issues, I was forced to go cold turkey off of that prescribed 300 milligram name brand anti-anxiety medicine that I had taken going on 23 years. And sometimes against doctor's orders, I would even take up to 450 milligrams a day of this medication. This was a very, very difficult time in my life for me to adjust from having it to suddenly not having it at all. I thought I was losing my mind, quite literally. It was during this time that I came back to my God after nearly 20 years with a brand new outlook on life. God had always been there, but I hadn't always acknowledged His work and His blessings in my life. He loved me, showed me grace and mercy. He had never left my side once, even though I had turned my back on Him. Fell away from Him just to come back to Him and then fall away again. This was a pattern in my life until 2011. Now, I know. I recognize. I acknowledge. I'm grateful. I have a very personal, intimate relationship with God. The relationship was always there. I knew right from wrong, and I knew He was there. I just didn't always acknowledge it. He was never far away from me, but I didn't always accept it. But I can promise you this time, there will be no falling away again. I finally get it. I really, really get it. My God is such an awesome God, and He never gives up on us. Even though we may often give up on ourselves and even Him, but He is steadfast and constant. He remains faithful to His children, loves us, gives us grace and mercy daily that we don't even deserve. He is with us through our joys, our successes, our triumphs, as well as our sorrows, our trials and our tribulations, as well as our disappointments and our pain. It ebbs and flows. It has ups and downs, but God remains constant beside us. Through the flowing river of joy in our life, as well as the raging seas that threaten to harm us. Folks, I'm sorry I'm going to run over a few minutes today, but my story has to be told. At the very end of this, in a few short minutes, I'm going to have my husband Shaziz join me. But my story had to be told, folks. It was my time, and each of you will have a designated time to share your own story as well. Folks, let my mess be your message. Take a look at where I came from and how far I have come. I didn't do this by myself, for without God, I am nothing. Nothing. Your life has purpose. Have you found it yet? You have value and worth. You are meant to achieve great things. Sometimes people think they know everything when they don't. Not one of us is any better than the next. Sometimes people are at ease with their life, mocking and neglecting those that are in trouble. Sometimes the less fortunate are ignored altogether. The world turns a blind eye on them. People will oftentimes give these less fortunate people a push when they're stumbling, rather than a holding hand out to help rescue them. Humanity is frail, folks. Life is short and full of troubles. But no matter where you are at in your walk in life, you can bring light to the deepest gloom. You must know that your past doesn't disqualify you from helping other people in incredible ways. In fact, who better to help rescue these people than someone who has had difficulties in life themselves? Folks, please, I beg you, reach out to these people. Connect with people in need. You may not even know who you are connecting with or what a profound way you may have impacted them with your own story. You might just save another soul from going down the same hole you were once rescued from. It doesn't matter what you've done, who you are, what you have been through. Your life still has purpose. You are qualified. You are qualified. You could still be used to save another soul. So I ask you, folks, what is holding you back from your purpose in life today? Take a leap of faith as I make the choice to be a missionary right where you are. Stand united. Rescue and protect. Love and help the needy. Be a light onto others' paths. Be bold, be brave, be courageous, and don't think for a moment that you can't be these things or that you hold no worth, that you have nothing to offer these folks. That is not true. You are qualified. You can do anything you set your mind to. It is always better to give than receive. It is simply wrong to see or hear of someone in need and do absolutely nothing. You might be asking yourself, what can I do? What can I possibly offer someone else that would make a difference? Do you feel as if you will come up short? That you will fail in your mission? Do you feel as if you're barely holding yourself together, let alone helping someone else? Let me ask you, folks, do you have compassion in your hearts? If you said yes, you already have what it takes to be a missionary. A part of being a missionary, a large part of it, is knowing, feeling, being compassionate toward others. Compassion is an action. It means to suffer with. It's not just enough to feel bad for someone suffering. It's vital to do something about it. Don't miss your opportunity. Compassion will require much from you. It will be uncomfortable, messy, difficult, and sometimes inconvenient. Compassion asks us to go where it hurts, to enter places of pain, to share in people's brokenness, their fear, their confusion, and their anguish. Compassion challenges us to cry out with those in misery, to mourn with those who are lonely, to weep with those that are in tears. Compassion requires us to be weak with the weak, vulnerable with the vulnerable, powerless with the powerless. Compassion means to fully immerse yourself into the condition of being human. Fellow brothers and sisters, I ask you, are you willing to suffer with someone, to sacrifice and give up what you have? Are you willing to love others as God has loved us? Are you willing to put your hand out and stand united to rescue one another so that someone else might gain? Shaziz, you have any comments that you would like to add to this today before we close?
Pretty much saying what I always say. We got an amazing opportunity to bring about some positive change to the world. And Beverly's story is an example of the hardships that we've all came down some really rough roads to get where we're at. And the only way that we're ever going to fix things in this world to make them any better is not to rely on any supposed representation, but to rely on one another to tell our stories and do the things that we're doing to bring positive change to the world, throwing one positive pebble in at a time. And so with that said, peace and love, everybody. Take care.
Thank you, Shaziz. God bless each and every one of you today. I hope that I have been a tool for you. I hope that my mess will be your message, that you will now take your message out to someone else and know that I wasn't sure I was qualified either. But I did it, folks, and so can you. God bless each and every one of you until next Saturday. Same time, same place. I love you so much. Check.